even whenever I'm doing literally sitting with classes of college students and teaching at just basic school, I just want to see people begin to free up and let go of some things that may be holding them back in areas that I believe that Satan has gotten hold of their life. I mean, obviously, I know it's a spiritual battle whether they realize it or not. But I will say this. We discussed this a little bit at lunch. It's really hard because for the church forever, it was basically you don't have enough faith if you have problems. And what it comes down to is that is a lie. God gave us relationships and people and circumstances all around us. And sometimes I wish you could see some of the most humble, incredible people I get to sit in front of, especially since I started seeing a lot of the VA guys up there and ladies that have served our country and just done incredible things. But some of them have CTE, PTSD. It wasn't PTSD necessarily from the military. It was from their growing up days that literally they were abused. And they have been holding on some of it for, you know, 50, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years. Some of them, depending on, I've got people from all ages. And it really breaks my heart. Because there could have been some freedom had they been able to sit with someone and to work through some of the issues. Now, God is on his throne and he's still working in their life. But there's certain issues that have been passed on to generations past that they know that were that it happened because of some of the circumstances that were just present, all right? I'm going to say it, since we've got younger and older in here. You talk about two totally different generational stances on the way people look at things. So I want to straight up tell you, I know I have just finished raising three sons who are all married. I know I don't look like I could have a grandchild, but I do. I have my first one, was born last May, very blessed, Reed Barrett Martin, and he lights my heart. I don't get to see him as much as I'd like, but the whole point is I'm in a different stage of my life than I've ever been before, but I try to stay very still, very, very connected to the teenage population to understand and know what they're going through, but because obviously I see so variety of different ages. And so they may have two different looks at it because of the lens, but the issues don't change. The problems, the solutions, many times they don't change. It's some of them are just working to get outside themselves and try and to look at some different things. First of all, I'm going to tell you in here, everybody knows this, you're not perfect. The lenses which I see people tear themselves up the most are because they don't feel like they measure up. They don't feel like they measure up. And because they don't measure up, their anxiety level is up here. They literally live on heightened anxiety all day, every day, especially this generation we live in right now. And that is not of God. And whenever I said this morning, learning to love yourself because God made you. He made you original masterpiece, it says. And that you need to understand, it's okay that, you know, some of us lose hair a little earlier or something like that. That's okay. You judge yourself much different and see yourself much different. I have an illustration that I use with a lot of my clients where literally it's a picture of my office. They don't know it because the very first picture is a picture of my carpet, really, really close. And I say, when you come into my office, that's what you think I'm looking at. Right? Then I show them the next slide, which is my whole office. That's what I'm looking at. But they think I'm looking at their deepest inner soul, and I can see their flaws, and I can see their pain, and I can see their struggle. And that is why they walk around with anxiety level up here, is what it's not true. What's not true is that everybody sees everything about you. They just don't. Now, some of you, you're really good at hiding things, and in and of itself, that's another issue. We gotta be authentic, and we gotta be real, okay? So when we get into this today, the reason I didn't do a PowerPoint slide for this one like I will the next one, is because this one I developed out of something that I use with OCD clients. I literally have a man that he will tell you his testimony. He lives out in Western Oklahoma. He was a music minister at a church. He's grown up in a family, funny thing, it's a family very similar to mine. Like, he grew up singing in my music family. He traveled all over the United States, where we just traveled all over Western Oklahoma and Central Oklahoma. But he has serious OCD. He almost didn't leave his house for 3 years. He was a music minister of a church. The only time he would leave was when he'd leave to go out of the church, do his thing. And he said, I would literally be standing there on stage and think, what are they thinking about me? Why is she looking at me? Why is he looking at me? How are they judging me? And by the way, that is way more common than you realize. But he has really big issues with that. And he had dealt with high anxiety most of his life. But during the pandemic, which the pandemic was 100% real, I was literally seeing teenagers during the pandemic because I was doing my practicum at Norman Behavioral Health. I was seeing 20 and below most of my time, and I was seeing suicide going out the roof. Kids not going to school, not seeing, they're losing their friends. Their friends were talking bad about them, and they couldn't control that because they're not with them. And it was just crazy. But I can literally take even adults back, and I'll say, tell me when this started. And they'll go, 2020. And they'll give dates, and it's like, everybody remember the Thunder game? We started the pandemic, really. Did you notice that? The NBA, when the NBA shut down, our youth group was supposed to go to the Thunder game the next week. We had tickets. Guess what? It took me a year to get the money back to the kids because I didn't see most of those kids for the next year. Isn't that insane? That's how it changed. We went from a youth group of 120, 130 every Wednesday night to, I mean, little. Why? People got scared. Why? Because that was what was being pumped to all of us every day. Now, is it real? The pandemic, it was real, 100%. But some people still haven't come out of that. They really haven't. They developed what we call a norm. Hear that word, a new norm, a new normal. I can go back, just like I can with that gentleman who I've, many gentlemen who have struggled with, some of them heavy abuse, and I say, what was your norm growing up? And I look at their family history, and we start going through their family history, and what we find is heavy. Even if it wasn't massive physical abuse, incredible verbal abuse. Just because that was just the way they grew up. That was, and we tend to parent as we were parented. Okay, or we go the polar opposite and we become their friend, which is a bigger problem, all right? So you got hard side love, total soft side love with nothing in between, all right? So you got all this damage and struggle that is 100% real. So today, as we look through this, I want everybody to do this. This is not from Star Trek, live long and prosper, all right? Everybody good? How many of you can do this? Can you hold your hand up and do this? No, your thumb goes back here. It's nothing. It doesn't count. This is 100% Christian. I'm going to tell you why. If you know the truth, what does it do? It sets you free. Jesus Christ is truth. Whether I sit with one that's a person who's Christian or not, I teach them this. By the way, they don't know that I say Jesus Christ is truth. I just say truth. Okay? Then I use scripture over and over to back it up. But what is it? This is truth. If this is truth, this is not true, okay? This, the other big one, is control. It's control. So if this is control, this is not control, no control. You don't have control, all right? The gentleman who had OCD, that, by the way, was not leaving his house, his wife sat with us in every session. I've only seen him live one time, because he lives out in Western Oklahoma, and I did it through the BGCO pastor. I see staff members and their kids through the BGCO program that they provide free counseling for their group, and then we do it at reduced costs. for our pastors and stuff. I have that contract with them or to do that. This gentleman literally took this principle right here, which I'll talk about, and the gentleman who couldn't get out of his house, his wife, after about 3-4 months, turned the camera one day whenever it was never on her. I knew she was there because I could see her like out the side, and she said, just tears streaming down her face. Because in the beginning, I would say, what's your win today? What's your win this week? I went to Walmart. I went to the grocery store. And we would just talk about that. After continually going through this, you know what that man does on the side now? He's retired kind of because of his health and stuff. He still leads music at a small church. He delivers food for Uber Eats. He goes into restaurants he couldn't go into. His wife, streaming tears down her face. And she goes, thank you. We went to a restaurant and sat down for the first time in 3 years together. I'm getting my husband back. It's truth. And what I say, when there are people living with incredible, incredible struggle, and he didn't get there overnight, right? It's building. But what it comes down to is, he would start to say, when we're on Zoom, he would say something and he'd go, I could see his hand come up on the screen. I know, that's not true. I know, I can't control that. I gotta let it go. He wants to, by the way, if I asked him to be here today, he would, even though they don't have any money, he would have driven from Western Oklahoma and he'd have been here. Why do I say that? Because he wants to see people get free. And plenty of stories like that. But what I want you to understand is, everybody's hand, this is truth. What is truth? It's Jesus Christ. It's God's word. It's what God says about you. It's not who you think you are. The lies that teenagers tell themselves, especially teenage girls, sometimes teenage boys, that I need this to be happy. I need this to be happy. This is not true. And I can even sit there with them. And I can say, is that true? Nope, that's not true. Everybody hears, if it's reality, to them, it's true, right? Now, even they can recognize, I shouldn't think this way. Once we do some Socratic questioning, right? Just normal questions, which is just, well, let's look at that for what it is, right? That's sometimes when I'll use scripture, but what it comes down to is, what are we looking for? For them to be able to find out right away that they know right up front, that's just not true. Everybody in here is old enough that I could do that pretty quickly. Now, why do I say that to you? This is not really written on the paper, so if you need to write down two words on that paper, write down true, truth and control. Truth and control. We're going to get to that paper in a minute. Truth and control. That's it. Those two words, truth and control. This you can remember. If you can't, you just never watch Star Trek, all right? This you can remember. Always remember, your biggest one, your biggest finger here is always what? Truth. Biggest finger is always truth. Your next biggest finger over next to it is control. Because this is therapy. What is true about them?
Could you try again?
Yeah. Anybody else have that problem? I did it. That happens to me in therapy all the time. So stop. You're going, trying to go to YouTube all of a sudden. So what is this? Truth is what is real truth. This is control. What can they really control? The problem is, guess who comes to see me? It's these two right here. It's out here. It's the things they can't control that are driving them utterly insane. If you're a school teacher right now, I live with one. I know what you're going through. It's a hard time to be a school teacher right now because parents don't see truth for their own children. They never do anything wrong because they're perfect. Okay, and that's not a soapbox, that is what it is. We don't want to think, and listen, I raise kids. I've raised them to do the right thing. So if they're doing the wrong thing, I don't want to know it, right? Now, I really do want to know it. I was a disciplinarian, but guess what? There's not a lot of people growing up that way anymore. So what it comes down to is we've had a generational situation of struggle where parents aren't wanting to acknowledge that their kid could have done something wrong. Now, don't get me wrong. Sometimes teachers do wrong things. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But there's a lot of things that I know keep people down because they're believing they can actually control something, or that they're believing something about themselves that just is not true. They've been a good teacher for 50 years, and all of a sudden somebody comes in and blows them out of the water, right? And they just can't let it go. I'm telling you, it's 100% true. And then its generation is different. And all of a sudden, you look up and everything you thought about you were good at your job, you're no good at it anymore. That didn't happen overnight. Now, if you stop being disciplined in your job, if you stop doing the little things that made you good at what you did, that's one thing, right? Laziness, I mean, that's real. By the way, I deal with that, all right? And I will always tell people, if I say, okay, what did you used to do? What do we do now? What's different? Okay, that doesn't take a rocket science to figure that out. But I tell people all the time, once you've let these two things go, the truth that it's not, or the untruth that's in your life, and the things you can't control, once you get that out of the way, this is therapy. Problem is, it takes a while sometimes to get through these things, because these things have become the new norm. The pandemic, some of the habits we've gotten into, okay, right? Some of us, I was doing really good eating, and I'd lost 108 pounds before the pandemic. Some of it jumped back on my body since the pandemic. I'm working on that again. But what it comes down to is, who changed? I can control that, what I do with my time. And the truth is, I can make time for the things I want to make time for. Amen? Okay? I know that we all live busy lives. I got 3 jobs right now, trust me. I know. But what it comes down to is, it doesn't change the fact we still make time for the things we want to make time for. There's times you need to put down things that are even really good for you to rest. Jesus did that. Modeled that for us. If you have significant relationships in your life, like a spouse, guess what you need to do? Better be making time for them. Alex has heard that from me before. A young youth minister came into my office and I said, Alex, what are you doing for a vacation this summer? Remember that? What'd you tell me? False Creek. He said, Jenny and I are going to False Creek for our vacation. I said, I was an older youth pastor who knew, you better take care of your wife. You only get one of those, hopefully. Right? Better take care of her. Falls Creek? Mm-mm. That ain't no pleasure cruise, all right? You see amazing stuff, but you need to get away. I don't care if it's for 3, 4, 5 days, whatever. Camp. Don't take money. It's a relationship, right? The problem is, what happened during the pandemic? We were already turning to it. We already talked about it. You can't give the answer. Come on, people. What did we turn to? Social media, which is the biggest farce of a word ever. It does not replace people. But what do we get? We get a life that looks perfect, looks good. And what we get in the end is we get snapshots of what people want us to see. If we get snapshots of the other stuff, they probably need counseling. Right? That's the oversharer. That I know. I've done that before. Been there. When you were hurting, just had to tell somebody, right? So, jump right here on the front top of your page. So, some of what we're going to talk about, these are going to be some things, general coping skills that over my time in counseling and even before that time, working with some counselors that I've been able to talk about and to do. Some of these things you might have heard before, but maybe whenever we get into, how many of you have heard, well, if you're starting to have like a high anxiety, make sure you do what? Breathe, right? Breathe. They don't even know how to properly breathe, though. It's easy to say, but it's harder to do. And guess what? The problem is if you don't, we'll talk about this, but you don't do it properly, it won't work. Because you don't just walk in and lift a refrigerator. You have to prepare your mind to go lift and your body to go lift that refrigerator. All right? So we'll talk about that. So real quickly, what is the emotional parachute? Does anybody know? It helps you deal with anxiety. It kind of got to get a little definition or a little bit around there. But what is it? It's the natural things that you have in your body that God has placed there. And this is what I'm telling you, the more you do my job and the more you study the body and you study about how God links the mind and the body, it is incredible the amount of neurons and just encephalins, endorphins, and all these things that are all in our body and how messages are sent and all of that throughout the body. But what it comes down to is it is all interconnected. God made you so incredibly beautiful and complex that you can handle some of the stress and struggles you think you can't. But because of the things you put yourself around sometimes, it makes it difficult. First, we talk about the counterbalancing force to combat stress and anxiety. It's called the parasympathetic response. There are different levels of that. There's three different ones. There's one that leads to your fight, flight, freeze, one in the middle. And then there's one that's total locks you up at the bottom of the ladder. At the very top of the ladder, though, is where we'd say if your response is hitting at all levels and you're coping and you're doing really well, you're at the top of the ladder, okay? So you're doing really, really well. The reactions down below are what we hit whenever we begin before we shut down, okay? These are the three natural responses that are in the middle of our ladder, all right? The fight, flight, and freeze. Some of you are really good at one of those. That is the way you've learned, the way you've learned to cope. Some of you in here are very vocal. You're a yeller. You're a fighter. You don't take it any other way but to think, we got to squash that, all right? That's one. Some of you, what do you do? You're a flighter, right? You take off. First sign of stress, I'm Bennett, I'm not in it, right? I'm out. I'm not a part of that, all right? But with some of you in here, this is where many people since the pandemic have been living, frozen. They're frozen. They don't know it. I sat with, like I said, those VA individuals. I literally sat with the guy and I said, just tell me like what it is that you do. Because he came in and of course, you know what he told me? My wife and I just don't get along anymore. Yell, 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 yell. So why? And she's hurting all the time. Physically, she's hurting all the time. What was it? It was all her fault, right? I guarantee you, had I been able to sit with her, guess what I would have heard? It was all his fault, right? Right? That's what we do. But what it comes down to is, once we started walking through, and by the way, I use like the five love languages. What's her love language? If you don't know what those are, you better figure that out. You need to know the love languages of your spouse. You need to know the love languages of your kids. Because if you're trying to love them the way you want to be loved, it ain't going to work. But just simply, his wife's love language was what? Acts of service. And I said, what is it your wife likes to do? Even though she's waiting on back surgery, guess what she did? She liked the garden. And I said, okay, well, tell me. If that's the case, he goes, well, I hate gardening. Okay. I said, well, maybe go out and spend a little time gardening with your wife. You know what I found out after he'd been that for a little bit? First of all, his wife, all of a sudden, who's waiting on back surgery, hadn't left the house to go eat with him in, he said, probably a year, picked the restaurant that she wanted him to take her to in Norman 2 weeks later because he went out. And you know what he told me at my next session? You know what we planted last week? You know what we planted last week? He was blueberries. I love blueberries. And he's bragging about the gardening that he hates to do. I said, could it be that you didn't hate gardening, you hated being out there with the gardener because you weren't meeting her love language and she was furious you weren't meeting her love language. You weren't making time because he had his own projects. And you know what he told me? You know, some of those projects I thought was real important, they really weren't that important. I got my wife back. That's three sessions, ladies and gentlemen. That ain't rocket science. Randy, you probably taught on love languages sometime in your ministry. I use it with premarital counseling. What it comes down to is these are just simple, basic things that have us frozen. These couples were literally, they were roommates. They were avoiding each other in the house they lived in. Why? Because if I communicate, I'm either going to lose my temper or I'm just going to avoid that person altogether. And you know what? How in the world do we have divorces after 30, 40, 50 years of marriage? You become roommates, not spouses anymore. Because each of these is just a natural response to dealing with anxiety and stress. That happens in all of our houses, all the time. So I'm not going to read through every bit of this because, number one, I'm not going to insult your intelligence. All right, I gave some of this to you for educational purposes. I want to deal with the back part because that really, the willingness, I want to deal with that right away because the willingness is what I try to teach all my clients very early on whenever we're dealing with stress and anxiety. All right, so we got this out here. Live long and prosper out here, okay? I'll say that so you can help remember what it looks like, not because it's really live long and prosper. I guess it could be. It could be. I mean, that's what I want. That's what I want to do, obviously. Hopefully, we'll see. Whatever God gives me. But here's what it is. This is a brick, all right? Good job having a Kleenex box down front. It's a whole lot easier to hold up than a brick, all right? But this represents, you name it, anxiety, stress, anger, fear, whatever it is that you're doing, okay? The term we're going to use is willingness. Willingness. The problem is, since the pandemic, there's many, many people that are holding it out here. Some people, they've been holding it out here for 50 years. This is an emotion, a struggle, a situation that they don't want to deal with, but they know they need to. This is whenever my grandpa, we had to take the keys away from my grandpa because he drove into my neighbor's yard as he was backing up to leave, all right? That's a hard conversation, ladies and gentlemen, to the grandpa we love and adore, but he's going to hurt somebody, okay? I got to be what? Willing to bring it in and weigh it for what it is, okay? This is a brick. Here's the problem. You know what happens? Every time we don't have that call, this is heavy. What happens? Just keeps coming. I can't hold it up. By the way, this Kleenex box, it ain't very heavy, but if I'm a strong guy. But right now, my arm's already getting tired holding the Kleenex box out here. And it's just going to keep coming. So what is it that this looks like for you? What is it that's in your life that you're holding out here hoping that you don't have to deal with? But you know it's causing you stress, anxiety, struggle. Now, some of you go, well, I'm fine. Okay. Who do you know that's struggling with something? Because they need the answers to this question. So when it keeps coming, here's what you need to do. If you're truly going to be willing, willingness means this. It's pretty easy. I'm willing to deal with my issue. I'm willing to deal with my struggle. I'm going to bring it in, and I'm going to weigh it. Okay, that's the term I use. I weigh it for what it means, what it is. What? Is it true? What's the truth? What's the truth about your situation? Okay? What can you control? Because if it's not true, let it go. If you can't control it, let it go. How many of you in here would honestly tell me there's something in your life that you've been holding on to because you don't really want to deal with it, because you know if you deal with it, it might cause you or have somebody else to have to change? I'll raise my hand because it happens almost every day to me. I have to say hard things to clients sometimes that I'm afraid if I say it, they may not come back. Anybody know that there's a money involved in my job, right? But what I say is, God's the one who brings them back in the door, not me. But there's times I have to ask hard questions. Could it be that you're believing something that is just not true? Right? Yes, sir. Absolutely. That is 100% true. And those get quoted, but the problem is half of my clients don't even know those verses. So what I'm saying is I say that to you because some of you in here, you have non-Christian friends. And they're dealing with big issues. You want to know how I got to the heart of the man who just hopefully walked the aisle of my former church? That, dealing with this. And then saying to them those truths. You don't have to have anxiety. You don't have to have the stress. Why? Because that's been settled. Okay? But what it comes down to is there is some deep wounds and there's some deep hurts that keep some people from doing some things. They don't even understand why they're not doing them. Have you ever said this? I don't know why I won't do that. I don't know why I won't do that. You do know why. You just have to get to the root of what it is that maybe formed that. Now, sometimes it takes complex therapy to be able to do that sometimes. It takes more than one session to sit there and go through that with somebody who knows how to ask a lot of questions. But what it comes down to is if you will truly be honest with yourself, you know that you're avoiding something, a pain. Maybe you've had to say something to somebody before that didn't go well. But I'm going to say something. When you learn to say stuff in love to people and it's not condemning, you want to learn, by the way, one of the best things? Sandwich method. Everybody in here knows the sandwich method? Please tell me you do. Positive, the meat, which is hard, and positive. Randy, you're my brother in Christ. I love you. And man, we have walked through the world together. I watched you do this, and man, it just broke my heart because I know that's not who you are in character because I've seen you change lives. I've seen your world change. You give people life. Did you notice I said a hard truth in there? But it's a whole lot easier to hear that, isn't it? Versus you. Remember, never make it personal. Always make it about behavior. Because isn't that what sin is? It's 100% behavior. Parents, you want to be a good parent? Quit making it personal. There's a reason why comedians make up jokes that they have another name, and I won't tell you what those names are because usually they're not very nice, that their parents called them, because they made it personal. Never say, you did this. Say, because you went through this and you did this, that's why I'm upset or I'm sad. It's the behavior that causes the struggle. It's not you. You have potential. You give hope. You bring light. But do you see why kids are so, they've heard, and we grew up, in my house, I had good parents, but I heard that. Why? Because that was a natural habit for us as parents to use that. Make it about behavior. Don't make it personal. It's hard because when they hurt you, right? What do we want to do? Make it personal really quickly, okay? That was a freebie, all right? For you grandparents, parents that are dealing with people, that's just natural relationships. It's always about behavior. Most of you would say people are good. It's their behavior that's not good. God didn't make people to be the way that we sometimes choose to be. It's the behavior. You can change the behavior, okay? So we go through willingness. Willingness to bring it in, willingness to talk about it, to let it go, to get through it, okay? So I'm going to use the gentleman. He, by the way, he gave me total permission. He would sit and do a video for me if I wanted him to about, I would just say, tell me, what is it that is true? Truth is, he would literally sit there and say, I know that person's looking at me and they're judging me. And I said, really? I said, could it be that you were also on stage and they were just looking at you because you were on stage? Yeah. Could it be they're sitting there and thinking, man, that song you just sang, bless my heart. Thank you so much. I wanted to come and tell you, but they were too shy to come and tell you. Yeah, I guess that could have been it. Because he would always tell me what? This horror story. That he'd made up in his head. And what came down to is 90% of the time, it's nothing like that. When they find out the truth, right? My wife interviews for a job, and if she don't get called the next day, what happened? That must not have gone well. Am I right? Must not have gone well. They'd have called me right away because, you know, or they have to go up the chain of command because also you already know they've interviewed at least 6 people for the position. And things don't just happen like that. But what does we do if we sit there and we focus on what? What we can't control. See, a lot of people would have said right then, they would have said, what's not true? We don't know what's true, so really, there is no truth yet. But what did we say? Focus on what you can control. There's times you don't know what truth is yet. We don't know how something's going to play out. But do you trust God for that? Do you trust God for that? Right? If you trust God for the results, if he shuts a door on a job, maybe God didn't want you to have that job. Maybe there's a protection. How many of you have ever done that? You applied for a position. You didn't get the position. It killed you. But a year later, you were like, praise God, I did not get that job. Right? But we don't remember those moments. What do we remember? The disappointment. The hurt. And so the next time, when you know you need to apply for a new position, I didn't get that job last time. I can't do that. They might tell me no. And I just can't take the devastation of no again. Didn't you just thank God because he didn't give you that position? It's all about perspective, ladies and gentlemen. How are you going to choose to see it? Do you trust God with your future? Do you trust God with your kids? Do you trust God, right? In the very end, what it comes down to is we don't know the truth always. We got to go with what we can control, okay? Sometimes it's going to be the truth right away. We know what the truth says. That's the dangerous part for me. Some people go, well, some people will say, they say, what is it that, since you don't say, you're not, like, I'm not working, I'm working at a private clinic, so I'm not working as a Christian clinic counselor, okay? I tell people all the time, I said, I'm not going to give anybody any advice that goes against Scripture. I'm just not going to do it. If they choose to go down that road, I can't stop them for that. But I personally am not giving them anything, so you don't have to worry about me talking to your son or daughter about identity issues. Because, by the way, I could show you exactly where those are coming from. And we talked about that. That is also a huge passion of mine, is this generation being confused in that area. That's because of pornography. 100%, and their friends, and influence of society, media, all of that. But I can show the demise of marriages and all that, and that is all based in truth. God says, if you're going to dabble in this, our society will pay the price. Everybody knows history. How did Rome fall? From within. Great place. Pretty incredible place. If you looked at it on a map, it fell from within. So what it comes down to is we could be headed there too if we ain't careful. Why? Because we are forgetting truth. Truth is huge. Control is huge. Guess what? Some of you in here, what are you allowing to dominate you? So next time you're having a conversation with your girlfriend over lunch, next time you're having the, and I'm talking two ladies together, all right? I guess it could be guys and girls, but your wife and you're trying to decide about your kids and what decisions you need to make and all of that. Use it. I promise you. Because some of you, you have some incredible anxiety. I couldn't let my kid go overseas and be a missionary. I might get killed. Yeah. Is there a better way to die? But actually, we'll find that not many of them actually get killed. Because they go over there and do certain jobs, certain situations, whatever. But what do we look at? Where do we go for safety? Worst case scenario. Because if we go to worst case scenario, what happens? If it's better than that, I don't hurt as bad, right? But if we live on worst case scenario, think about that. 24/7 in our life? Do you see why you get paralyzed? Do you see why you won't make decisions? Any questions about any of that? By the way, I want to allow some time for questioning on any of this because it's super important. The reason I gave you all those papers, it's not because I planned on like reading all that to you because I'm not going to insult your intelligence. 99% of you in here, I'm sure, can read, all right? And if there's any question in there, it's like some of it, for instance, the breathing, all right? I'm going to give it to you, all right? I literally freak my clients out. I love to do it. I think it's so funny because I have a sense of humor, is I literally will sit there and I will say, okay, I'm going to show you a skill. You ready?
Do you see her?
That was one breath. That was one breath. I'm telling you, the funny stuff that they say whenever I start doing that, it's so funny. Because most of mine have a pretty good sense of humor. If they're going to be with me, they're going to have to, all right? What it comes down to is, what did they do? It's one breath that should take 8 to 12 seconds in, and then when you get it all the way in, you hold it, and then you let it back out. And you learn to do that in a way that no one around you knows you're even doing it. You have a tough spouse that you're trying to keep from saying words back that you know are not going to be edifying in those moments? Do you have something at school that's so stressful? But here's what I'm going to tell you. Whenever I told you you got to be ready because you can't just go and lift the refrigerator, what you do is, there's a reason, by the way, whether or not you like the Middle Eastern look of it, yoga and things like that, you know why those actually work to help with your stress is because you're breathing, which is a God natural thing. But what it comes down to is in those moments, whenever you know you've got a stressful thing coming up, all right? Let's say you know you've got something stressful coming up or one thing that stresses you every day. Like, you know, I have a client. Okay, the client I was talking about, he was told he had high blood pressure. He said, I've always had really low blood pressure. Well, guess what happened? They went in one day and they gave him a shot and then they took his blood pressure. Well, what happened? The nurse, I don't know what she was thinking, but she should have taken that first. But because she did, it gave him high blood pressure. But guess what? The next five times he went into the doctor's office because he walked in there and got high blood pressure. He never got it high at home, but he got it high in the doctor's office. The place became his stress. They're going to find out I have high blood pressure. No, you don't have high blood pressure. So I had to work, we worked on that breathing. And I said, picture yourself in that office and just breathe 8 to 10 times, just like that. The most stressful thing you can think of. And what you're doing is you're preparing to lift that refrigerator. So your body literally sits there and goes, and it takes a little bit, but it tells you that's okay. Anybody in here watch that show, Bull? Somebody, okay. I hated that it went off, actually. I liked him whenever he's on NCIS. I missed him whenever he's on there. But the whole point is, if you remember in there, there was a scene where his child was kidnapped. And whenever he went into the room where his child was kidnapped, remember there was a phone going off. You remember? And then after a while, in the next episodes, when the phone would go off, what would happen? He'd have a panic attack because it would remind him of when his kid was kidnapped. Association. That's 100% real. At the end of one of those episodes, they gave you a good mental health tip. What was he doing? He had to go and literally sit in his child's room, letting the phone ring. This is after his child was found and everything, but he had a PTSD moment. Something bad really, really happened in this one place, right? So he went and he sat there and he just breathed. And he said, I am safe. This is a good place. My daughter can stay in this room. And what did he do? He changed the neural pathways with which we're going to all these bad, bad, bad places. Okay? I have a client literally had not been back in his house from abuse. He left when he was 16 years old. He went back 27 years later. And nothing happened when he was there, but when he came home, he ended up having to go in treatment because of his anxiety. He was waking up and having panic attacks in the middle of the night, struggles. Incredible. Your brain remembers things. And he went in there, then we've been doing some work since, and what it comes down to is he's doing much better. It comes down to you have trauma associated with certain things that you need to be able to tell yourself now are okay. Those places, it's not the place. It's not the situation. It may not even be the person. That's, by the way, car wrecks. Another PTSD moment. Everybody thinks PTSD, by the way, is two soldiers and all that. And no, in fact, complex PTSD can be your childhood that was just an abusive situation over and over and over and over and over and over again. That's what he was dealing with. It was a trigger when he went back in that house of all the physical and verbal abuse he got from two parents that were older and had changed. But he had not been back to that house in 27 years. But it triggered all of that. Your mind is an incredible thing. And it remembers things so different, so crazy. So that anxiety and that stress was just so. But what did he need to do? He said, I needed to go back. And I said, tell me the good things that happened in that house. And we started to go through, oh, I got my first hunting and fishing license there. I got this, I got that. I remember at Christmas when I got a fishing pole. I remember whenever, you know, you hunting. And he, of course, he's a hunter and fisher. And he's up in the northeast in the woods, and most of his memories are around that stuff, his good memories. We had to go down that road to reconnect. And I said, who are those parents now? Some of you, you don't want anything to do with your parents, but they're not the same people they were when they raised you. That breaks my heart that you can't forgive them and move past. Some of you, well, they don't deserve my forgiveness. You hadn't met them. No, I haven't. But I also know that you living with hurt, anger, and pain, a lot of anger, will affect you. Unforgiveness will affect you. Am I right, Mr. Randy? That's a lot of people. We set with people. I'm just an angry person. I don't know why I'm angry. You do study. Look at any study on bitterness in us individuals, and how that just leads to complex issues, health issues, anxiety, stress, all of those things. They just heightened. High anxiety for over a period of time, by the way, what does it lead to? Who knows? High anxiety over a period of time leads to no hope, which leads to depression. Leads to depression. I get Christians all the time ask me this question. What do you think about medication for depression? I will tell you, I'm not you. Some of you take high blood pressure medication. Some of you take a lot of other medication. I'm not going to say what's right or wrong. Sometimes it's a temporary thing while you work through some of the issues. I know some people that were for a time period were on those kind of medications, but now they're not anymore. They're in a different place. So what it comes down to, some of that can be very temporary. That's a choice that you have to make. I'm not going to sit here at all and try to make that a biblical thing, because that's not. I know how we try to do that sometimes, but that is not a biblical thing. All right? There could be something chemical going on inside of you. Everybody understands that. I've worked with a special needs population for many years now, and it's that there's a lot of different things that can be firing off in a lot of different people that we just do not know. All right? And that could be a little bit of piece of any of us. All right? So why do I say that? In the very end, high anxiety, high stress are things that I pray that you will begin to allow yourself to heal. But if you will not be able to heal unless you're willing to deal with some of your past. And I said it this morning, and I hope you heard me. You do not look to the past to bring up pain, hurt, shame, any of that. That does not do you any good. You look to the past to learn. That's it. You look to the past to learn. A lot of you don't want to look back at parts of your life because you're ashamed of them or whatever. Everybody, listen, there's enough inspirational quotes out there. The whole reason why God allows us to go through, one of my favorite memes is Tony Stark. Have you seen that? He says salvation and he's like, oh. And the next one, he's beat down on the ground. He's all bloodied, messed up, and it says sanctification. It's my favorite meme. Yeah. It's like one of them I've used with many people. I was like, isn't this a picture of what life is? God allows us to go through difficult days and knows we're going to have sin and struggle and problems and all of that. Sometimes we need to be reminded of those salvation. Why were you so happy? Because you were forgiven and you were loved. And maybe for the first time you felt that in your salvation. Some of you, you've lost the joy of your salvation because you've allowed circumstances, people, situations to come in and to begin to control you because you've been believing a lot of junk and you've been trying to control things you can't control. That boss, there's a reason why he has that title. You can't control him. Yeah. Okay. So what do you mean? Okay. Okay, then we go back to the other direction. You just said it. You know that it's controlling you. So you know the truth. And until you live the truth, until you understand the truth, and until you deal with the truth, it's going to have you. There's a reason why it goes back and forth. We try to control things and people that we can't control. But the problem is, who gives the authority? People who get mad that we have a different president than what I might have wanted in the last election, or you, what it comes down to is that really doesn't matter. Who put him there? Who allowed him to be there? God, right? God allowed him to be there, because if God didn't want him there, he didn't have to let him be there. And listen, I'm going to tell you this, by the way, if we truly believe Scripture, if a day is like 1,000 years and 1,000 years like a day, and we keep saying, I know Jesus is coming, well, guess what? If he waits one more day, you and I are going to be gone, and so are the next 10, 15 generations. So quit living your life like you're scared of tomorrow and you really wish that Jesus would just come, because what it comes down to is he says, I'm not going to let you know when I'm coming anyway, so you're not supposed to quit living your life. Would it be easier? Absolutely. I'm looking forward to heaven. But what it comes down to is, it ain't time yet. He'll tell us when it's time. The trumpets are going to blow, and if you know him, you get to go. If you don't, then it's going to be rough. My parents used to sing a song back in the day, One Day Too Late. Jesus came, and you've been left behind to wait. He ain't going to find me there. I'm going to be like, whoosh. I watch a lot of superhero movies. I just get to picture it in my head. Did that answer your question? I know I understand. And I will say this. That's why I said to you from the very beginning, by the way, I need you to start to name things a little different whenever you're looking at a complex pain and situations. Don't say things that are like absolutes. Think like, this is hard. This is difficult. This is things that, those are, we all deal with those words, right? Every day. Versus, I can't, I won't, I shouldn't. You know what I'm saying? When you start saying that, do you see what you're already doing? Because anything that you have out here, you've had here, some of you have had out here a long time. Anything you've had out here, and maybe it's just something this week that's new, and you know you don't want to deal with it because it had fallen flat the last time you tried it. But you know what the right thing to do is, and that you don't want to deal with the stress, the anxiety, the struggle. You've got to do what? Trust God. Bring it in. Weigh it. Ask the questions and listen. Give it to God. I'm just telling you right now, I'm dealing with the work situation. Because remember, I have three different jobs dealing with the one work situation that I've never met a person that I'm working with that's so evil. I mean, it's killing me. There are some days that I just, I sit here in front of you today as somebody right now who's going through a lot of tribulation and struggle over one person. One person, but they have control over a whole lot of my clients and a part of my job that I have. Pure evil. They don't care about their clients, they care about themselves. And when I didn't agree with them to stand up for the clients, I've been punished over. People trying to drag my name through the mud. You ever been there? Guess what it comes down to? Can't control it. I know the truth, and I got to give it to God. Vengeance is mine. Say it, the Lord. I just can't. When I try to carry that burden, it kept me up for hours, middle of the night. Anybody else been there? I tried to carry, and then I got up the next morning. You know what I did? Tim, listen to what you tell all of your clients. You tried to carry a burden, and I took 5 hours of your sleep. How are you going to enjoy counseling now on 3 hours of sleep? 2 hours of sleep, really, that night. Because I chose to not let it go. I can't control it. Yeah. You're good. Yeah, absolutely. I could barely hear you, but I think, you're good. You're good. No. No, you're good. Yeah, it's good.
Hello.
So I want us to take, some of you are like me. I mean, I don't actually have to go to the bathroom right now, but some of you are like me. So if you need a five. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sorry about that.
Sorry, I was going to answer her question. So Jesus Christ teaches Cast your burdens on the Lord and he will sustain you. So whatever it is that you're going through, if it's bondage, if it's depression or something that you're just struggling with to let go in your life, if it was a trial, whatever. But I do know one thing, that he is sharing with us that we can't control it, but God can control the timing of our trials and the timing of the storm that we're going through. So wind and wave, just obey Jesus Christ and he'll bring you through it and he will sustain you.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I keep finding is God does allow me to go through so many things. And I literally walk in and God puts somebody in my life that is going through something so similar. And I'm like, man, I can tell you it's not easy. It's not, but when I deal with it properly and I put it in its proper place, I'm a different person, right? And I focus on the things that I can control, right? Which is the clients I get to sit with, the people I get to sit with, my wife, my kids, my beautiful grandchild, and you name it, I can choose to focus on what, by the way, Marriage Counseling 101, come in, they sit down, and what do? They focus on the 15 to 20% that really stinks in a marriage, okay? Because guess what? When we see those, it's polarizing. 80% of our marriage, which is really good, that's never brought up. All right? Do we need to change sometimes? Absolutely. I just told you about a gentleman who just started meeting one love language of his wife and changed overnight. I think he just came in to brag, actually, is what I told him, because he was doing so good and changed so quickly. I mean, but what it comes down to is he said, I hate something. He didn't hate it. He used to do it with her, right? But he had to put his pride down, put himself around her. Yeah.
Do you have like a certain breathing tool or technique that you...
The biggest thing I'll tell you on the breathing part is it talks in there about the vagal nerve or vagus nerve, depends on who's saying it. What it comes down to is it runs through for all the way from your brain through your nose down all the way through to your pelvis. Okay, let me tell you something. Like literally just doing some, you can actually rub back here. It talks in there about yawning. You can sometimes, some of you need to shower, like whenever you're feeling like really overwhelmed, showering sometimes can kind of calm that. You need to do some things to reset your vagus nerve, because what happens is it gets so tight. And that's one of the things on the ladder that will take you to the middle, that'll take you to one of those fight, flight, freeze, or to shutdown mode. All right. So it's like, it literally is like a muscle. And that's when I said about lifting the refrigerator. That is, there's tons of really good, I know YouTube, you can be a little nervous about it, but you can actually look up the vagus nerve, the vagal nerve, whatever, as far as what people call it. You'll see people call it both. They'll talk about some of those exercises. That gentleman I told you with the OCD, he was like, I thought that was like voodoo whenever you told me about it. And he said, I looked it up and it was actually really good. And I started doing that and recognizing that. And so there's plenty of great videos in there out there about that. The biggest thing is a lot of people think about breathing. They do it. They breathe way too heavy because it's not natural, right? It's not natural. I want to teach you to be able to breathe and be in difficult situations and people never know. Literally never know. I do have a client that literally, I can't go into his story because it's really long, but long story short is he started doing that, learning just to breathe through his struggle. But once again, he said, I would literally lay there at night and I'd prepare myself because I knew the difficult situations that I had really like tanked on. And he said, I was able to think through those and hold my temper whenever he'd lost his temper, he'd lost a job, he'd lost some other scenarios. And he'd turned to alcohol, drug abuse. And he was just trying to get out of that. And literally, that was huge for him to relax. That also put, because everybody understands your body wants to stay, your body, go back to basic science, your body wants to stay at natural homeostasis. And what happens there, that's why exercise is incredibly good for you. Those of you who are not getting out walking, not getting out and doing some of those things to breathe and to exercise. That's why it's so big, is because it gets you up here, right? Run, get you up here. It stimulates your system just like that. And then what happens? Your body starts to come down. That's why whenever you leave the gym or you get done walking, you're like, oh, I feel so good. I may be tired, but I feel so good because your body is actually calming itself and returning to homeostasis. All right? That's really a natural fix for anxiety, 100%. You got to be doing, how many of you hate to give speeches? like doing what I did this morning. You don't want to get up in front of people or whatever. No lie. Now, you may not be able to do this, but any like push-ups, jumping jacks, anything like that. If you do that right before, now don't do that and then walk out on stage when you're breathing heavy. That's not good. But do stuff like that. What happens is your body then gets worked up and you were already like an 8 or a 9 as far as your anxiety level. What you'll find is going and exercising and getting your heart rate up and doing all that, your body starts to return. So then whenever you get up to do that public speech, it might be at a 4 instead of an 8. That makes sense? Because your body is naturally trying to come back down to that natural homeostasis level, which it wants to stay at. That's where it's comfortable. All right? That's why really it's super important. And I should have said that from exercise is always important because your body needs to be moving. And you say, well, I can't do that. Well, I have clients that can't get up, but they can get on those little bikes with the little pedals. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of things you can do, but the whole point is you got to choose to do something. All right? Okay? Because definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. All right? And I tell people all the time, I do CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, mostly. I do a lot of different types of therapies, but that one's the one I use mostly. It's all about the way you think. Okay? Everybody thinks I have to change the behavior. Until you think differently, your thinker's broke. Until you think differently, the behavior is just going to follow the way you think. Right? And that produces the outcome. All right? So, we're going to be hitting loneliness, isolation right after this. So, I want to give you quick break, and then we'll get right back into it.